to Krishna in Vrindavan. This is episode 27, and we're going to be covering chapter 34, Nanda Maharaj saved and Shankachuda slain. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, welcome you all again. And so we're going to read through the text here from Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 34, and elaborate a little on the verses as we go. So this is it's a really nice pastime and instructive for us. Now, we just did the five chapters of the Rasa Dance, chapters 29 to 33. And yesterday we had a two-hour class on the reunion and the Rasa Dance. And before that, we had the two-hour class on the gopis meeting Krishna and then being separated from him. And there are songs of separation. That was very beautiful. So just like in the Bhagavad Gita, the confidential part is in the middle. The first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are mainly karma yoga. And the last six chapters are mainly jnana yoga. And the middle six chapters are bhakti yoga. So it's like a sandwich with two pieces of bread and the good stuff is in the middle. So this is a little bit like that too, the 10th canto, in that it's not exactly the middle, but the Rasa Lila chapters are sandwiched in between Krishna killing demons. So, and then we've been talking each time about how those demons represent anartas. So the idea is that before hearing and really entering deeply into Krishna's Rasa Lila, we have to be free from anartas. So, if we're at an advanced stage of faith, so depending on our degree of faith, then hearing the Rasa Lila will free us from lust. And we heard that Phala Shruti at the end of chapter 33. But if some lust does arise while hearing Krishna's Rasa Lila, then this chapter, chapter 34, is meant to help us, because Shankachuda, one of the second demon that we're going to encounter here in this chapter, represents desire for name and fame and for association with the opposite sex. So again, we're going to get a chance to get purified of whatever, if any little lust did arise. So that's the mercy of Shukadeva Goswami that he narrated the pastimes like this for us. Okay, so now we're reading from text one. Shukadeva Goswami saying, one day the cowherd man, eager to take a trip to worship Lord Shiva, traveled by bullock carts to the Ambika forest. So here this day happened to be the Shivaratri day, according to the Acharyas. And it's a day that's for worshiping Lord Shiva and Ambika. And so it wasn't like a regular thing that the Vrajvasis were worshiping Lord Shiva, but it was a special festival. So they were going there, and Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book that they went out of curiosity. Like, because their main thing is they're mainly interested in Krishna, but it was Shivaratri, it was a festival dedicated to Lord Shiva. So let's go and see what's happening at the Ambika temple, where there's deity of Shiva and his consort Ambika. In the same way that, like, when we do parikram, if we go on, you go to India and go on like Navadvip Mandal parikram or Raj Mandal parikram. So there are some famous temples of Lord Shiva, and the devotees go there. We'll go in the temple and we'll, you know, say Om Namo Shivaya and chant Hare Krishna to offer respects to Shiva. We'll pay our obeisances there, because the principle that's given in the nectar of devotion is that we should not disrespect the demigods. But so we should respect the demigods, but we should be very clear on their position in relation to Krishna, that they're not in any way equal to Krishna, but they're devotees of Krishna, they're servants of Krishna in the they do work, they work for Krishna in the cosmic administration, basically. So yeah, but we can pray for them to help us because they're exalted servants of Krishna. We can ask them to help remove the obstacles to our devotional service to Krishna and like that. So then after arriving there, they bathed in the Sarasvati river and then devotedly worshipped with various paraphernalia the powerful Lord Pashupati and his consort Ambika. So Shiva and Parvati are different names for them. The cowherd men gave the Brahmins gifts of cows, gold, clothing, and cooked grains mixed with honey. Then the cowherds praised, "May the Lord be pleased with us." So this is etiquette. It's an etiquette when visiting holy places is to give charity to the Brahmins and the sannyasis and exalted devotees that are living in those places. So that's what they're doing. They came ready to give in a giving mood. And they're giving cows because that's their wealth. And Nanda, Sunanda, and other greatly fortunate cowherds spent that night on the bank of the Sarasvati, strictly observing their vows. They fasted, taking only water. This is another etiquette that when you go to a holy place the first day, it's good to fast. It's often recommended to fast, just to purify yourself, ground yourself, get in the proper state of mind that I didn't come here to enjoy. I came here to be purified, to serve, to, you know, to, yeah, enter deep into meditation of Krishna. So fasting is helpful for that, getting that mood. And then, so they spent the night there. And then let's hear what happened during the night. During the night, a huge and extremely hungry snake appeared in the thicket where they were sleeping. Slithering on his belly up to the sleeping Nanda Maharaj, the snake began swallowing him. So Nanda Maharaj is there in his sleeping bag, or it's war. They're camping out, sleeping under the stars in this place, you know, in the little wooded area near the bank of the river. This huge snake comes and just starts like getting Nanda Maharaj from the feet up, first his feet and then his knees and then his thighs, and so like that. And then Nanda Maharaj starts, he wakes up, obviously. He's like, he's thinking, is this a nightmare or is it reality? It turns out to be the real, he's really getting swallowed by a snake. So then the first thing he thinks of is Krishna, of course, because remember, he was kidnapped by Varuna and taken to the underworlds, and Krishna saved him then, and Krishna is just always saving everybody from everything. So the first he wakes up and he sees the situation, Krishna, Krishna. So he says, Krishna, Krishna, Mahan Ayam Sarpo Mam Brisite Tata, Kapanam Parimochaya. Sarpo means snake. This serpent is swallowing me, my dear boy. So it's funny because he wants Krishna to save him. He recognizes that Krishna is like the one who can save him. And he says, Prapanam Parimochaya, like, I'm surrendering to you, please deliver me. But then he's saying Tata, which is a very like affectionate way of addressing a child, like my dear son, my dear boy. So he's like, come here, my little child, my dear son, and save me from this crazy serpent that's swallowing me. It's just funny, like the mood of the Rajavasis, that they call out to Krishna, you know, to save them when no one else can, but at the same time, he's still just a little boy. He's still not God. He's still not like, you know, some superpower demigod or anybody. He's just little Krishna, their little darling son. So when the cowherd men, so first, the first people to jump up were actually the cowherd men. And when the cowherd men heard the cries of Krishna, they immediately rose up and saw that he was being swallowed. Distraught, they beat the serpent with blazing torches. So they had these sticks with, you know, like flaming torches, and they lit them. And then they started beating the snake, then firing blazing torches, thinking that we'll burn him up, we'll scare him away. He'll spit out Nanda Maharaj and leave us alone. But the snake was not deterred at all by those beating, being beaten with blazing torches. Yeah, so it says, but even though the firebrands were burning him, the serpent would not release Nanda Maharaj. Then the Supreme Lord Krishna, master of his devotees, came to the spot and touched the snake with his foot. So they're like beating him with all their might, with fire and everything. The snake's just like totally like not even feeling it. And then little Krishna, this little boy, comes up and he's just like, puts his little bare foot on him. So, yeah. So somebody might wonder, like, how is it that something like so terrible like this is happening to Nanda Maharaj? Because, I mean, Nanda Maharaj is the father of Krishna. Krishna's right there. And, you know, although the Rajvasis see Krishna as a little boy, we know that he's the Supreme Personality of God and that he's controlling everything. So why does he allow this to happen to his beloved father? You know, why would Krishna allow his devotees to be in such a nightmare-like situation? So the acharyas say that it's because a few reasons. One is that Krishna wants to glorify the devotees. So we see here with Nanda Maharaj that he just calls out to Krishna. So this is the nature of a devotee, that Krishna is their only shelter. He doesn't try to, Nanda Maharaj doesn't try to fight the demon. He doesn't call for anybody else. He's, certainly there's a lot of strong, the cowherd men come because they want to help him. They want to do whatever they can to help him. But ultimately, Nanda Maharaj knows that Krishna is the only shelter. Krishna is the only one that can really save the day. And this is also instructive for us, you know, that whenever we're in trouble, whenever we need something, we should just call out to Krishna. And that knowing that Krishna is the person who can always help us out of any difficult situation. He's always there. You know, he's right there and he can always save us. So, and also this may be to test our faith. So when things like this, when we're in trouble, you know, when the snake is swallowing us, so to speak, when we're in difficulty and we're wondering, Krishna, Krishna, save me from this difficulty. Or why are you putting me in this difficulty? Like, I'm your devotee. I surrendered my life to you. And now this terrible thing is happening to me. What's going on? So this is kind of like a way of testing our faith in Krishna, our devotion. So are we going to take shelter of Krishna like Nanda Maharaj did? Or are we going to rebel? Are we going to be like, oh, Krishna is not here. He's abandoned me. He's, he doesn't care about me. He's not God, or he's not powerful, or whatever. So it's Krishna's, you know, one, he's testing us to see if we're going to still love him, even though we're suffering, you know, because it's like, are we just a sunny day friend? You know, that when the sun's shining, then let's play. But when things are tough, then we're going to be like, oh, bye. You know, are we like that with Krishna? And the reason that, probably the reason that we have to, he puts us through this is not because he doesn't like us or not because he wants us to suffer, but because it's what we need to purify ourselves, to let go of material attachments so that we can actually like come closer to him. So that's the reasons why devotees suffer. Yeah. Okay, so then let's see what happens when Krishna puts his little lotus foot on this big snake. The snake had all his sinful reactions destroyed by the touch of the Supreme Lord's divine foot, and thus he gave up his serpent body and appeared in the form of a worshipable Vidyadhara. So the Vidyadharas are like, they're not exactly demigods, but they live on higher planets that are like a little, like there's Swargaloka, and the planetary system that we live on is called Bhuloka, the earthly planetary system. It's in the middle of all the, there's the upper, the middle, and the lower planets. Then the upper, the next up planet from Bhuloka is Bhuvarloka. So Bhuvarloka is where all these like higher beings that are not quite demigods live. The next level up is Swargaloka. That's where all the demigods live, like Indra. And, well, not all of them. Brahma lives on Satyaloka, which is way, way up there. But most of the like regular demigods, they live in Swargaloka. And that's where people who are very pious go. It's very nice there and have a good time there and all that. But then there's this other class of higher beings like the Vidyadharas, the Charanas, the Apsaras, and the Kinaras, and the Kimpurushas. Yeah, all those types of beings, they live on Bhuvarloka. Yeah, Arjuna? Shiva is in his own place. Shiva, okay, I don't know. Where is Shiva? Mount Kailash, where is that?
It's like above the Brahma Jyoti, not in Vaikuntha, but it's like outside of
Shiva. Yeah, there's Sadashiva, who's in the spiritual world, and then there's he stays on Mount Shambhu. He stays like, I think Mount Kailash is in Himalayas. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I'm not very well versed on Lord Shiva. Huh?
It could be another system.
It could be, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Okay, so then this snake, he became a Vidyadhara. And in fact, he was the leader of the Vidyadharas. And his name was, what's his name? Given somewhere. Anyways, I'll tell you in a minute. Sudarshan. Yeah, that's what it is. Good. The Supreme Lord Rishikesh then questioned this personality who was standing before him with his head bowed, his brilliantly effulgent body bedecked with golden necklaces. Says the demigod was about to speak, and now Lord Krishna wanted everyone to focus. So everybody, the Brajvasis are there, the cowherd men are there, and they're all just kind of like, the snake just came. So they're all like talking, and they're kind of like, very wound up by this whole instance that happened in the middle of the night. And some people are just waking up like, what's going on here? And who is that? So the demigod is about to speak. But Krishna wants everyone, he wants to focus everyone's attention. So before the demigod can speak, because Krishna wants all the Rajvasis to hear what this demigod's going to say. Before he speaks, then Krishna speaks, because he's thinking that this will give people time. This will pull people into the situation. So Krishna says, "My dear sir, you appear so wonderful, glowing with such great beauty. Who are you? And who forced you to assume this terrible body of a snake?" So yeah, he asked him, how did you end up in this horrible body? So now Sudarshan is going to tell his story. The serpent replied, "I am the well-known Vidyadhara named Sudarshana. I was very opulent and beautiful, and I used to wander freely in all directions in my airplane. Once I saw some homely sages of the lineage of Angira Muni. Proud of my beauty, I ridiculed them, and because of my sin, they made me assume this lowly form." So that's his story. He was this, higher being, and they have these flower airplanes. They have these, like, airplanes that don't need a motor or fuel. They just, like, fly. And, what did I drop? Oh, my bookmark. Thanks. So then he became proud. So this often happens with residents of the heavenly planets, that they're up on this level, and then they see people down on Earth, and they think all of us are higher than all of them down there. But it's actually not the fact, because the devotees, like pure devotees on Earth, are more exalted than demigods in heaven, even though, like, geographically they're in a lower tier of the universe. But spiritually, they're more elevated. So this Vidyadhara made the big mistake of looking down. He's flying over in his airplane over Earth and looking down and seeing these great sages who happen to be kind of ugly. And he does what we just learned about in Nectar of Instruction, Text 6, that you shouldn't do, right? Judging a pure devotee based on their body. So it says that even if a pure devotee is an ugly body or a deformed body or is old and wrinkly or whatever, still you should overlook that and just look at the service that they're doing for the Lord. You should look at their consciousness, the level of consciousness that they have. So unfortunately, Vidyadhara didn't read the Nectar of Instruction. And so he saw these ugly sages down there, and he's just like, those guys are so ugly. Just look at them. And then the sages, they're like, oh yeah, well, you want to know what it's like to be ugly? Become a snake. So then they cursed him. But when sages curse somebody, because it seems kind of bad, like one might think, well, why do saintly people curse people? You know, like that's kind of like two wrongs don't make a right. Did your mother ever say that?
Yeah.
My mother used to always say that. My brother would hit me and I'd hit him back, and then he'd come and complain that she hit me and he hit me first, but two wrongs don't make it right. It's like, ah. So yeah, so you might think that two wrongs don't make it right. So okay, Sudarshan did something wrong, but then they should have, but they shouldn't come down to his level, basically. You know, they should be the exalted ones. They have to be the equipoised, peaceful, transcendental sages and not react, right? But these sages, they very thoughtfully cursed him. It wasn't just a reaction. It's not just that it was like, you know, knee-jerk reaction, like, laugh at me, you become a snake. It was like, let's see how I can benefit this person so that he doesn't do the same thing again, so that he becomes free from his pride and his like superiority complex, which is going to end up ruining him. And so then they curse him to become a snake, but because they want to benefit him, then they do it in such a way that they know that he's going to get the blessing of Krishna. So is it better to be a snake who gets touched by the lotus foot of Krishna, or a Vidyadhara who never gets to see Krishna? Yeah, I mean, because it's all about getting touched by the lotus feet of Krishna is the best thing that could happen ever to anyone. So this was actually their mercy. It wasn't a curse at all. It was a blessing. And that's the nature of curses. Like we saw with Narada Muni when he cursed the two sons of Kuvera to become trees. It was a very similar thing. They were in the water. They were bathing naked. They were messing around with women there in the water. And then Narada Muni walked by and he's just like, you two become trees, but in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, so you can see Krishna, and then Krishna, little baby Damodar, is going to crawl in between you, and you're going to fall down, and then you're going to be liberated. So like that. So the sages are very kind, because after all, he was Vidyadhara. He was a demigod. He wasn't a demon. He was just exactly like the son, like Mani Griva and Nala Kuvara, sons of demigods who just became proud of their material opulences. So then. Okay, now as usual, whenever these things happen, the person who is liberated is going to offer prayers to Krishna. I'm getting so many texts. It was actually for my benefit. So he realizes that. It was actually for my benefit that those merciful sages cursed me, since now I've been touched by the foot of the supreme spiritual master of all the worlds and have been thus relieved of all inauspiciousness. My Lord, you destroy all fear for those who, fearing this material world, take shelter of you. By the touch of your feet, I am now freed from the curse of the sages. O destroyer of distress, please let me return to my planet. So he's like, yeah, so you can see, like, even though he got liberated, it's the same thing. Like, he's not like, let me stay here with you, Krishna. I just want to be with you all the time now. Can I be part of your... He's like, no, let me go home now. Yeah, so it says here that he was in a chastened state of mind. O master of mystic power, O great personality, O Lord of the devotees, I surrender to you. Please command me as you will, O supreme God, Lord of all lords of the universe. O infallible one, I was immediately freed from the Brahman's punishment simply by seeing you. Anyone who chants your name purifies all who hear his chanting as well as himself. How much more beneficial then is the touch of your lotus feet? So it's nice he mentions the chanting of the holy names, Yan Nama Grinan Akilan. So that the benefit that comes from being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna can also be had by chanting the holy names of Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya is so merciful that even though we are down here in the Kali Yuga and it's like a nightmare, but we can be freed by chanting the holy names of the Lord. Thus receiving the permission of Lord Krishna, the demigod Sudarshana circumambulated him, bowed down to offer him homage, and then returned to his heavenly planet. Nanda Maharaj was thus delivered from peril. So then the inhabitants of Braj were astonished to see the mighty power of Sri Krishna. It's kind of funny because you see how like Krishna actually wanted to get their attention. He wanted them to hear this thing, you know, about how you shouldn't become proud. And yeah. So they completed their worship of Lord Shiva, and then they went back home to Raj, all the way respectfully describing Krishna's powerful act. So it was just another story to tell, you know, another, usually it's the cowherd boys that get to tell about these things, but this time, like, the cowherd men got to get a chance to go home and tell everybody.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he was still attached to his position. It's just like, you know, you see the movie Tukaram? Like at the end, Tukaram's going back to Godhead. And then, who was it? The Lord or anybody? So it's like anybody else who wants to come can come. And they're all like, oh, my daughter's wedding is next week. Oh, I got the crop in the field. I have to harvest. Oh, you know, I just bought a new house and I need to fix it up. It's like they all had something that they wanted to do here in the material world. They weren't ready. So Vidyadhara, this Sudarshan wasn't ready. He still had things to do.
When you get your power, they
come. And he'll be like, oh. I'm just kidding. Oh my God, get out of here. Okay, so now we're going to start another pastime. There's two pastimes in this chapter. So this one's about Shankachuda. Once Lord Govinda and Lord Ram, the performer of wonderful feats, so it's Balaram, Krishna and Balaram, were playing in the forest at night with the young girls of Raj. So here, now it's like kind of interesting because Krishna and Balaram are together. And they're there, some gopis are there. So Krishna has his gopis and Balaram also has his gopis. And they're all like, this day happens to be holy. That's what the acharyas say. So it's the day of, you know, the pastime of holy where they throw colors or they have like these big syringe type squirt guns. They fill it up with colored water and they spray each other. So they're throwing colored water on each other and throwing the colored powders. And they're celebrating holy like that at night in the forest. Krishna and Balaram wore flower garlands and spotless garments, spotless until they got into, started playing holy. And their limbs were beautifully decorated and anointed. The women sang their glories in a charming way, bound to them by affection. So this wasn't like a rasa dance where they're embracing, kissing and all that. It was like a game. It was like, you know, celebrating. It was holy. So they're playing holy. The two lords praised the nightfall, signaling the rise of the moon and the appearance of the stars, a lotus-scented breeze and bees intoxicated by the fragrance of jasmine flowers. They're the bees again. Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire range of musical sounds simultaneously. Their singing brought happiness to the ears and minds of all living beings. So Krishna and Balaram, they're able to like sing all the notes, that something only they can do. Yeah, so the effect of that singing was like, it was very like, you know, overwhelming to the ears. It was like a this multifaceted, multi-scaled harmony in multi-stereo. And the gopis were, it's described that the gopis became like stunned, and some of them were fainting. And then some got so absorbed in the music that they just forgot themselves. Like, you know, very advanced devotees, when they're in kirtan, they'll just like lose themselves and just totally get ecstatic and go wild and sometimes faint. So, one of my teachers was, when the teacher that taught this was saying that, he said that a mundane analogy is like when the Beatles would sing during Beatlemania time. Some of the fans would actually like faint. Yeah. They would literally faint when the Beatles were singing. So it was like that. Like they just swoon and pass out. Yeah. So that's what it says. The gopis became stunned when they heard that song. Forgetting themselves, O king, they did not notice that their fine garments were becoming loose and their hair and garlands disheveled. When Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram thus played according to their own sweet will and sang to the point of an apparent intoxication. So they were also getting ecstatically intoxicated by their own singing. So in that situation, a servant of Kuvera named Shankachuda came upon the scene. So here we go. Da-da-da-da, Shankachuda. Shankachuda is a similar situation because Kuvera is the demigod in charge of wealth. So he was a servant of Kuvera. And he was very wealthy. And he was also another one that was kind of like, well, Kuvera also has yakshas and rakshasas. Not all of his servants are demigods. Some of them are demonic. So this one was kind of demoniac. And he was very proud of his wealth and his power. And it's just like, it's like, you know, men who become very rich and powerful in this world, they think they can have any woman. You know, they think that all the women of the world are meant for their enjoyment and should be for their enjoyment and like that. So this is how this Shankachuda was thinking. He saw Krishna and Balaram there with all these beautiful, beautiful gopis. And he was like, you know, why are all these gorgeous girls being wasted on these lowly cowherd boys? They're fit. They're not, these boys aren't even fit to enjoy these girls. They're for me. You know, I'm qualified for this level of beauty. So then, you know what he did? He just like, he picked up a stick and then he just started like, he just like very brazenly walked right up there and started like herding all the women and kind of like herding cows, like in a certain direction away from Krishna and Balaram. He's like, come on, you girls, come with me. And then because he was this very powerful personality and he had a big stick, the girls were kind of like, just kind of going. That's what it says. He was herding them off. And yeah, so the acharyas note that he didn't actually touch any of the gopis, although obviously he had his evil plans to do things. But yeah. And then it's kind of analogous to like human trafficking, you know, when these people like kidnap women and, you know, bring them to some place and try to use them for their nefarious purposes and stuff. So it was like the original human trafficker, this Shankachuda, trying to get the gopis away from Krishna and Balaram and thinking about these useless cowherd boys, they're wimps, they're intoxicated, they're just being silly. You know, we're just gonna like get all these girls. So yeah, so that's what happened. Shankachuda brazenly began driving the women off towards the north. The women who had accepted Krishna and Balaram as their lords began to cry out to them. Hearing their devotees crying out, Krishna, Rama, and seeing that they were just like cows being stolen by a thief, Krishna and Balaram began to run after the demon. So now here comes the big chase. The lords called out in reply, do not fear. Then they picked up logs of the shala tree because he had a stick, so they also got sticks. And the shala tree is a kind of tree that's like very hard, like stone hard. And they were chasing after him, that lowest of guhyakas. He was running away. So yeah, then when Shankachuda saw them coming toward him, it says, Shankachuda saw them coming toward like the personified forces of time and death. So the demons are always afraid of time and death because, you know, they know that because of their activities, they're not going to a good place after death. So they don't want to die. The demons never want to die. For devotees, time and death are like our friends because they bring us closer to Krishna. Like, yay, I'm getting to the end of my lifetime. Yay, I'm going to Krishna soon. It's just a matter of coming down the home stretch now. Yeah.
Oh boy, another gray hair.
Yay. So yeah, so when he saw it was like he wasn't seeing them as wimpy cowherd boys. He was seeing like death personified and time personified, like closing in on him like that. And then he became confused and then he just like, he left the girls and he just ran away for his life. So then what happened was Lord Balaram, this was a good example of transcendental teamwork here. They worked together. So Balaram was like, okay, Krishna, I'll stay here with the girls because they're a little upset after being, you know, this big demon coming and taking them away. And so I'll stay here and comfort them and protect them and make sure that they're safe and happy. And you go and get the demon. So like that. So Balaram just stayed there and told the girls to sit down and he was talking nicely to them so that they would feel safe and recover from that incident that just happened. So then the mighty Lord Krishna overtook Shankachuda, right? Because we were reading in Shusha Upanishad how the Lord can pass all others running. Remember that line? Can pass all of his running. So there's no way that anyone can outrun Krishna. Krishna is going to catch everyone. The mighty Lord overtook Shankachuda from a great distance. So Shankachuda is way in front and Krishna just zoop, caught up to him in no time at all. overtook Shankachuta from a great distance as if from nearby, my dear king. And then with his fist, the Lord removed the wicked demon's head together. He just literally punched his head off. Boom, and his head just flew. And Shankachuta also had this beautiful jewel on his head that was shaped like a conch. That's what Shanka means. Shanka means conch. So he had this very glittering jewel, a conch-shaped jewel that was actually like his powers were in that jewel. So he punched him, his head fell off. And then when the head hit the ground, then the jewel fell off. It was like a part of his head. It was like embedded in his his scalp. So it fell off and then he was dead. And then Krishna just picked up the jewel and he was like, oh, pretty jewel. But then Krishna's thinking, who should I give the jewel to? And of course, there's all those gopis. They're all of his gopis. There's all the Balaram's gopis. And in the Rasa Lila, Krishna just, for those of you who are listening or know the story, in the beginning, there was a little bit of a competitive mood between some of the gopis, you know, someone thinking, oh, Krishna likes her more and Krishna's giving more attention to her, or she's more qualified than me, what to do, or that one's not so qualified, what's she doing here? So there was like a little bit of that mood amongst the gopis. So the whole reason that Krishna left the Rasa dance was, or left them in the first place, was to unite them. Because then they all had a common problem. Like, Krishna's gone. We were just with Krishna. So then they sort of all united in their misery, in their pain of separation from Krishna. And also that pain of separation purified and elevated those ones who were maybe not so completely 100% pure to the pure platform. So now they really were, it all was actually level playing field. They were all equally qualified. And everybody just felt sorry for everyone else, you know? They bonded in their misery. It's like misery loves company. So then in that state, then Krishna was like, okay, so now I'm coming back and now it's gonna be different. There's not gonna be any vying, you know, any competing, any, you know, jealousy or anything between them. They're all just gonna be really happy that I'm here and that I'm with everybody and that everybody's happy. So because he just did all that, he just managed to unite them. So now he doesn't want to just give the jewel to one of the gopis, because then the others might be thinking, oh, why her and why not me? Oh, that's not fair. He doesn't, oh, he loves her. He doesn't love me. And then they get mental. So he actually wanted to give it to Srimati Radharani, but yeah, he didn't want there to be any, you know, aftermath of that. So then he just gave it, he came back with the jewel and he gave it to Balaram.
Right.
Solved all the problems. Balaram's in another category. And also because Balaram is the older brother, then they wouldn't see it that, you know, Krishna doesn't care for us. He only likes Balaram. They would see it that Krishna is like, he's doing, you know, he's acting according to etiquette, that he's offering the booty. He's offering the jewel to the superior. Because generally, like if there's a battle, then whatever the booty is, whatever the, you know, riches you get from the battlefield, you go and give them to the king. So he gave them to Balaram. But then the acharyas explained that after giving it to Balaram, then later when the gopis were not all together, then Balaram gave it to Radharani. Because Balaram understood Krishna's mind. All right. That's the end of this pastime. Yes. He died.
You know what happened after that? Like, where'd
he go? So, it's not explained here, actually, but at least, I don't know, maybe it's another place, but not that I know of. But generally, the demons that are killed by Krishna, they go to, they get Sayujya Mukti. They merge into Brahman, or they merge into the form of Krishna.
Is that right?
Pretty much, yeah, because the soul can't stay in that situation. So, but then they'll come back down and be like a demigod or a human on earth in a like elevated family, and then they have a chance to become a demon. But because he was touched by Krishna, then he's got a lot going for him. Yeah.
So, all right. Instead of the gate of the same body, not like what a foreign kingdom. A certain body, does that mean that the certain body was dead but still like wrapped around death, not in the front?
And then they pull him out. They still have to pull him out of the dead snake corpse.
Yeah.
I mean, probably.
This whole exchange, guys.
I'm getting kind of slimy. I'm sitting slimy in here. Oh, snakes alive all over your body. I hope he wasn't a sleeping bag.
You can just check it out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pardon?
I wanted to say that it's really special for these people to be the ones in the present. There's so many jivas in the universe. And, you know, think how many vidyadharas are proud.
Yeah.
And Krishna's like, oh, this is the one I'm gonna show. And
yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So surely there's some backstory that this one was somehow blessed, or he did something special that qualified him to be the one, you know, to be touched by Krishna's foot.
Did he do this a lot? Maybe there's more than just what's told in the books.
Yeah, there's so many pastimes of Krishna. The Bhagavatam gives just a kind of a sample. I mean, they like, yeah, when Shukadeva Goswami or Vyasadev, when they narrate these pastimes, it's they choose a selection that, you know, that covers all the rasas, so that we can understand all the relationships with Krishna and you know, be like we're just talking about, connected, like to be attracted, and also those which are particularly instructive for us to learn lessons, and then also those ones which are purifying. That's why, like, we hear about all these demons represent an artist, so when we hear about them, then we're supposed to become purified.
The cat pastime
is not in the Bhagavatam, but still. All right, anything else? Okay, then. Krishna in Vrindavan Ki Jai. We only have 3 more pastimes. Yeah, but do we? 16, 17, 18. The 18th is the last day. All right. Thank you all for coming. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.